Pod.
Rugby pod.
Hello and welcome along to the Rugby Pod, brought to you as usual by our good friends at Guinness. A big thanks to Guinness and all their support during the season. We're still in lockdown, but we're still recording. How you both doing, guys? Yeah, Jim, your beard's slowly growing back, mate.
It is. That's the only news I've got. I've got no other news at all. That's as good as it gets. I had to walk out the house yesterday, actually. I had to have an hour time out. Me and Beck had crossed eyes. Not really crossed words. It was just the look, mate, across, as in, I need to get out of here, Beck. So I went and sat outside in the chair during terror hour. Terror hour in the Hamilton household is about 5:30 to 6:30. Went and sat outside for, well, it was meant to be 10-minute call off, and then I fell asleep. Came back in about 6:30, and she was filthy, mate. Ups and downs still. Ups and downs. I'm enjoying my training. That's a good part. I'm still busy with Rugby Pass. We saw the Hambo doc was out last week. We've got a few cool opportunities and a few cool projects in the pipeline. But, mate, just the same as everyone. Trying to stay productive. Trying to stay positive, and apart from the crossed eyes, get it? Cross eyes? It's the same as words, but you say eyes because we didn't say anything. You didn't need to say anything. We just looked at each other. Yeah, just getting through it. Still getting frustrated with the government, I'll be honest, not to get all political. Just need info. Mate, just need info, and the frontline workers need stuff that's going to protect them. This country is bedlam, mate. And I don't know, I had this chat actually with my mate. I was like, right, so if you've got other countries, right, that fall in line, so say you've got some of the countries in Europe that look like they're falling in line because they've had to. So you've got Italy, and my auntie lives out in Spain, where there's no Spanish around them, and they're all English, mongrel mob, and they've all got tribal tattoos. But you know what I'm saying, that kind of part of Spain. Everyone's falling in line, right? You've probably got 90%. I don't know what the numbers are. Let's just go on my superficial knowledge of different cultures and different countries. 90% of people fall in line, right? You've got the UK. I'm thinking 70-80% of people are probably doing what they should be doing. Tell America that, mate. Tell America they do not give a shit. But why would you? Mate, it's the land of the free and the home of the brave, apparently, or whatever it is, liberty and all these things. I'm watching this unfold, and I am just like, yeehaw! But hey, having watched Tiger King, what do you expect from different countries? So I'm looking at, it's almost like a social experiment. Again, going back, look, people are obviously dying, so we're trying to have a laugh here and trying to lighten the mood slightly. But in my eyes, I'm just watching it. So as a social experiment, to see how different people deal with it. I know that we're following the regulations and doing the right thing. Where's Boris?
He's ill, mate. He's had coronavirus.
He was playing computer games as well, apparently, when he was out of intensive care. Come on, Boris. You know what's going to happen, right? Boris is going to come out of hiding or wherever he is in this mansion. I wonder if he's having microwave lasagna, which is Mondays. I hate lasagna! That's every Monday!
Gertie, I saw a disturbing photo of you floating around in recent days. Were you on the toilet, or what was going on there?
Well, yeah. I mean, like anything, every day sort of blends into one now, doesn't it? So you have your routines. And we talked a little bit about bathroom routines last week, didn't we? So my little area of the house that's only mine is my ensuite. And I go in there and I whip my phone out and just ponder life and see what's going on. And just by chance, my good friend Jim the Melted Wheelie Bin Hamilton calls me up as I'm having a poo. So there you are, FaceTiming your mate as we're chatting away, and he's taking pictures of me as I'm sat on the bog.
What are the first two words that I say to you every time that I call you, which is most days?
How bored? Is that the two?
How bored? Every single mate that I ring, I literally just answer or ring them, and just first two words are, how bored?
It's interesting. I literally get into bed every night with the missus, if she lets me get into the bed. And I just say, however bad we feel, love. You know, and it is tough. Everyone's got their own issues at the minute with the lockdown. Jim's got it twice as bad because his two elder ones, as well as his two twins, will be screaming the house down as well. So my daily calls with Jim Hamilton kind of cheer me up because he likes to moan more than me.
I tell you what I do. I really, and we joke about it and whatever, but JJ and the other kid, Phoebe, bless her. But I actually do really enjoy the outdoors with them. Like I do. I love going out with them on their bikes and going out running and doing these things. But it's the twins, mate. If anyone is thinking or have twins in their family or triplets or anything more than one, in fact, don't even have one. Don't even have one. And and apart from that, hey, I've enjoyed looking back at some of the old games. Mate, I tell you what, right? Leicester back in the day, we've spoken about it, but they were proper good, eh?
When you say they, you mean we, Jim? I was in that team.
No. I'm peeling back. Did you ever play with Dino or not?
No, he'd just become coach.
Yeah, okay. That's what I'm looking back then. I don't, like, they're in colour. I don't think they were in colour, but Jiffy's commentating. Matt, I've enjoyed seeing some of the clips on Leicester TV, actually. Back in the glory days. When rugby was there, when we had rugby.
Yeah.
It was happening.
We'll come to some of that later, but the highlight of my day, Andy Rowe, is literally looking for the lunchbox every day. And I don't mean the lunchbox as in what I'm going to be eating, because that just goes to a big pantry, a big cupboard, loads of it. But we go for a walk about 5:30, 6 o'clock every night with the twins. That's my daily exercise. And I'm looking for Linford and his lunchbox. And I know where I just get excited as you're walking up to where we've seen him a few times. So that's as exciting as life gets for me now. What about yourself?
I've been doing a bit of a splash out on Amazon Prime, ordered some cricket gear, some rugby gear.
Just to
do some skills in the backyard, because I saw Jim online.
Which bit?
When you were throwing the tennis ball into the rubbish bin.
I swear to God, that was first take. I thought you were about my Instagram picture that I put on the bike where with my shirt off just to show people I was shredded. And the amount of people that came back to me and said that my pecs looked like tea bags, wet tea bags. Just like I breastfed for a year. Mate, I know. Just doing my bit, mate. I've seen Carlos Spencer on there, and I'm like, if King Carlos can do it, King Jim can do it also.
Similar rigs.
Well, yeah. I mean, he's lost it a bit now, isn't he? He's nearly 50. So, I tell you, it's frightening. It's frightening how skillful I am and how fit I am at the minute. Once we come out of lockdown, mate, I tell you one of the other weird things as well, right? So, has anyone even attempted to trim the bush in lockdown? It's not even crossed my mind.
Just let it grow. Let it grow. Let it grow. And that's what they're doing.
I don't want to hear any kids' song. Mate, all I know is Beck had me in a headlock, mate, and I thought I was nose to nose with Bob Marley. So that's us wrestling before we go to sleep, mate. I don't know, but Bob Marley got the better of me. She loves me. I love you.
Should we have a look at what's going on in the news at the moment? There's quite a few reports coming out of contingency plans over the weekend. So what do you guys make of the prospect of the whole Six Nations being replayed in the autumn if the Southern Hemisphere teams don't come over?
Oh, again, who knows? The picture changes from one week to the next. The longer this goes on, the more difficult it becomes, isn't it? But I wouldn't like to see the Six Nations replayed. Maybe I would. Maybe I would like to see the Guinness Six Nations be replayed. More ruggers, mate. I'm happy to see. Before, it was all about player welfare, right? And you couldn't have any more rugby than one game a week. I want to see four games a week or five. Mate, I'll hit me with six, mate. Something. But I can't see them playing redoing the Six Nations. Can you, Goody, or what?
Well, it's interesting, wasn't it? Because ultimately, it's all around whether the big Southern Hemisphere teams are coming over to tour. So, and again, it's finding a way of trying to recover from the financial crisis that we're going to see as well. All the unions are going to miss a massive amount of money if those games can't go on. So, load of questions. The big thing for me is, ultimately, the club game is the one that's going to be affected the most in terms of lack of revenue, and that has to be at the forefront. You can't just prioritise richer unions and say we're going to have an 8-week block of international games when actually in the calendar, again, that's taking more away from the club games. There has to be some sort of balance. Yes, we know that normally there's four games in November. For me, it'd be around finishing this Guinness Six Nations that's just happened and not been completed as a priority over starting a whole new one. You know, we'll have to see how the season pans out and when we actually get to restart or finish this one before those big decisions can be made, because where the RFU and the Six Nations committees are looking at trying to get a Guinness Six Nations in the autumn, or whether the club game is looking at how to finish this season and then start the next, you don't really want a full Guinness Six Nations in October, November, and then have it start again in February of 2021. So some tough questions, some tough answers, but it has to be for the good of the game as a whole, not just the unions, I think.
And of course, there's that CVC money as well, $300 million that was going to be invested into the Guinness Six Nations, and apparently that's on hold. So how big of a blow is that?
They put it on ice at the minute. Obviously, they were investing $300 million into the Guinness Six Nations for 14% of equity, which, Jim, in terms of fractions, what would that be, Jim? 14%, what fraction would that be?
Well, if we work out that 10% would be 3.
What?
30.
10% would be 30. What are you talking about?
What are you saying? 300 mil?
No, 14%. Oh, geez.
Of what?
14%. What is that as a fraction?
What do you mean 14% is a fraction?
It's quite a simple question, James. What would 14% be as a fraction? Let me give you an example.
Is this the riddle or not?
No, this isn't the riddle yet. 25% would be 1/4.
Yeah, yeah.
So 14%, what would that be, James?
1/5.
That would be 20%.
Oh, nearly then. 1/6.
Not quite. Keep going.
1/7.
Well done, James. Well
Thank
done,
you
James.
Very much. Yeah, Thank well you, done. Mate. I told you, who's bothered about fractions?
Mrs. Good.
I'm a
Mrs.
reader, mate. I'm a reader.
So, yeah, they wanted obviously a seventh of the equity, which ultimately for them would be in the future TV revenue and everything like that. And I think they talked about $750 million. For a TV deal moving forward, didn't they, as a potential revenue stream. So, yeah, I mean, it's on hold at the minute. Doesn't surprise you it's on hold either, does it, in terms of where we are. CVC have invested a huge amount of money in the Premiership and in the Guinness Pro 14 as well already. And another 300 million chunk is probably put on ice for a while because they'll have other investments within the portfolio that will need funds as opposed to going out and spending already. So we shall see. Watch this space. But, yeah, interesting times ahead for everyone.
Well, other talking points that have been going round in world rugby at the moment is Augustin Pichot's challenge to be world rugby chairman. And Gertie, you wrote a column on that this week for Rugby Pass, didn't you?
Yeah, I certainly did. You know, talked briefly about the differences between Augustin Pichot and perhaps him coming in and making some drastic changes and a kind of new age voice and eyes looking at it, as opposed to Sir Bill Beaumont, who's, you know, a brilliant guy and has been amazing around the game. But you know, I'm a big believer in someone with more forthright views taking over, and we've seen that Gus Pichot could make some big changes and hopefully along the way he'll get our vote.
Well, we can have a chat now with the man himself, former international Argentinians legend and now political big dog, Augustin Pichot joins us. How are you, mate?
How are you guys? Nice in isolation.
Gus, it's great to have you on. This is your vice captain speaking. It's Jim Hamilton. And what the millions of listeners can't see is they can't see the memorabilia in the background unless they're watching it on video. The contrast of your background compared to mine, where we've got a few boxes and got my wife's dress. Mate, some people might have thought you played a bit. Look at it. It's amazing.
Yes, this is the only, to be honest, this is the only place that my daughters and my wife allow me to have any rugby stupid things or important things. So I have this small office in my house that I have, and I kept the jersey that I played or some friends gave to me. This is the rugby sanctuary. The rest, you won't find a rugby ball or a rugby shirt or a picture of rugby. It's not allowed in the other side of the house.
Well, it looks amazing. I'm very jealous. So whereabouts are you in the world? Because World Rugby is obviously in Dublin, or it's not obviously if the listeners didn't know. You're from Argentina, but I imagine you're on the road. But so where are you doing all these this campaign from at the minute?
Buenos Aires is where I'm living at the moment. This is my house. I live just 5 minutes away from my local club, where I started playing when I was 4 years old, when my dad used to play. So I came back to where I started, where I started living. So I love this place, my hometown. It's 40 minutes from downtown. It would be like Mortlake from London, and it's a beautiful, quiet place near on the suburbs of Buenos Aires.
Yeah, Argentina is a lovely place, mate. Toured there with England a few years back. Salta La Linda is my favourite place in the world to go to from a rugby tour.
You won there as well.
No, we lost in Salta.
I thought that you had a 100 record there.
I'll claim it, but we definitely lost when I played, so which was fairly normal when I played for England.
Hey, there was a double back-to-back victory. The first Northern Hemisphere team, Scotland, I think it was 2010, Tuchman and Mar del Plata, man of the tournament, apparently named in the it was called the Pink newspaper that was in one of the Argentinian shops that I saw. Scored a try, mate. I've got great memories of Argentina. I love the place.
I remember it well. Yes, you. That's true. You won back to back on a very difficult time. I was there trying to hold everything together, and you just smashed us. Yeah, fuck, I remember. Yeah.
That's what the vice captain does, mate.
I think that's Jim's only ever tier one victory, to be honest, but there we go. Let's chat about, obviously, your campaign then. We know you're vice chairman at the minute. How's it come about that you're now going for the chairman of World Rugby? It seems to some people perhaps that it's a bit late because it was only going to be Bill, or has it always been a plan to come in and put yourself forward?
I thought when things didn't move on and I felt that I, with Bill, we were having some, not a fallout, because again, I have nothing to say against Bill. He's a legend of the game and I would never talk bad about him. But when we have some difficulty instrumenting things and pushing for things and trying to modernize things, I said to Bill, we need to push harder. And then in Japan, I said, Bill, don't worry, I won't create any problems. I will step a little bit aside. And I said, no, let's carry on together for more years. And I said, Bill, no, I can't. I can't carry on like this. And I have to be true to myself. If I want to be here, I want to be for a change. I don't want to be here on Royal Boxes. And I don't need this. I need to do things. If not, I go back home and do other things. I decided to come this road, not because I always thought that I was going to be a board member or something. I just loved the game. And I played the game and I was successful or not, whatever you want to say, I enjoy it very much. And I wanted the game not to be divided like it is now. I said, okay, maybe in the north and the south, they can have a combined arrangement and then they can have no lists and go together like it happens with Bill and myself. So I waited. To be honest, I came back home after the World Cup. I came back home, relaxed. And in January, Bill announced with Bernard that surprised me quite much. And it surprised a lot of the unions of the South as well, saying, hold on, we haven't been consulted, no interaction. And that's where the South asked me to lead the new, this was the first week of February that we have a call. And, you know, like, you guys probably understand more your system, more on a process way where they put everyone together on the act. You have to go on a board meeting and they give you your support and all these type of ways. And I got that full support. And then I said, okay, let's launch. I had to tell Bill in the next 2 weeks, I'm going to see him in Paris. The COVID-19 was starting to get some speed. And when we arrived in France, I said, I cannot come now and talk about an election or about if the world is going to go apeshit. You know, it doesn't make sense. I have a lot of employees that I needed to address, you know, and I just find out, like everyone, like you guys, that the whole world was completely in an uncertainty moment. So I said, I'm sure that the elections won't take place. I'm sure that they will be postponed. As a common sense, I'm not joking, I'm saying. And when 2 weeks later, I receive a message saying, oh, we're going to go through these elections because it's, I said, well, it wasn't very difficult for me to sit down and write the manifesto. It's what I think and I've been doing for the last, when I used to play and when I left the game. So you ask me whatever of a manifesto, nobody coached me, nobody. I just tell you what I think and what I feel. And that's why I think the game it's on this crisis.
And I think, Gus, when you look at it now, and if there are any positives around the situation that we are in, I think everyone's evaluating the situation that they're in life, but also in sports we use, obviously we're talking about rugby, is the state of the game that we're in. And looking at the different policies, it sounds like we are getting political. Maybe we are getting a bit political, I don't know. But I haven't seen many differences in terms of what Bill believes in and what you believe in terms of taking the game forward. So with Bill, for example, and you've been very vocal about globalising the season, and it's brilliant, like I 100% agree. But then I'm thinking, well, does Bill think that we should globalise it? But he does as well. So maybe just to the millions of listeners out there, what the differences are in terms of you taking the game forward, if you're going to run the show with me as vice-captain, and then also the way that Bill sees the game moving forward as well. Are there glaringly obvious differences in kind of your policies, if it were?
Again, I would never go against and criticise anyone, and especially the opposition. I think we've all been together. Even Andy has been a pain in the ass playing against me.
Hey.
I was there and he kicked me, pulled my hair and everything.
No. Never touch the hair, mate.
Bill, you pulled my hair. I remember it very well.
Oh, sorry, Gus. Can I still be your vice president?
So what I mean is that same integrity, I keep it. And this is why I joined Bill 4 years ago. When Bill came to me, again, I couldn't care less of being the chairman or not being the chairman. I don't have that. I was there to play in the team, and do something special. You know, sometimes you're the vice captain, sometimes you're the substitute. That's how we've been brought up. That's how we are. That's our DNA. When during the last 4 years you're trying to kick every drop goal like Andy did and not pass the ball, and you think that he's doing a different game plan and a different setup, then you say, okay, guys, I have to leave Leicester, go to Saracens, or change the team, or you need to do something about what you really believe in yourself. You know what I mean? I tried to make it happen. And I tried the global game. I was there. I kicked the whole thing up after the San Francisco meeting because I thought it wasn't enough for the players, for the emerging nations, for the women's game. I did it inside. But then at some stage I said, okay, it's not that I wanted to be here because I was waiting for my time. I could have carried on like this and probably, I don't know, if somebody asked me about being the chairman, I don't know, whatever. But not being the vice chairman without doing those changes. If Bill wants to show that he can make them, I'm very happy. If he wins, I'd be 100% behind him doing the changes. I tried, I couldn't make it.
And then where would that... So you're being very, very vocal about it now, which is great. I think we all agree there needs to be changes in the game. So if that were to happen, if Bill was to go on and win the election, I'm loving it, it's all political. Yes! But where would that leave you now? So obviously you are vice chairman as it stands. You mentioned the relationship, I'm sure, is still fine. I mean, it's nothing personal, is it? It's all about taking the game forward. But where would that leave you if Bill did win this election?
Well, at home... If I continue the quarantine, doing more shopping and more cleaning in the house. but I haven't, to be honest, I didn't negotiate a position in EXCO or a council membership. I'm not so desperate to continue on a system that I cannot give things. I can go down to my club and help the Americas to keep on growing. I love the game. For me, the game is bigger than me or Bill. I will carry on all my life. It gives me everything. This is part of my DNA, my story. I become the person who I am because of the game. So you will find me somewhere. You will find me there. And always looking and being very consistent when I played, being a pain in the ass for many, or when I retired, being the same pain, saying, I want a more equal world. That's how I am. That's how I brought up. And that's the thing that I want to transform. That's my way of thinking. And if I lose again, I'm fine. I lost before and I understand how it feels.
And Gus, I love your passion because obviously the reason behind you doing it is because you want to see the change and you want these changes implemented. From all our listeners' perspective, the global season is the first big hurdle I think most people think we need to get over. Is that your main kind of area of the manifesto that you need to change straight away? Because I know Bill mentioned it 4 years ago, but there hasn't really been any change under his stewardship, has there?
And to be honest, it's the mindset, and you will understand, as rugby players, you will understand it. I think the first thing you need to change is the mindset, how to think innovative on a very modern way, how to engage with the players, how to engage with the fans, how to engage with the loss of the game. We've been doing it in a very, on a back foot reactive way. If there was an injury, then we brought in the safety rules. If there was the professional game, then we have to have. If there was private equity, then we engage. And that what that creates, it's a lot of different ways and very difficult to put everyone together. When at the end of the day, I pushed, and I was very vocal about it, about having the meeting we had in San Francisco. I sat down with Bruce Craig. People like it, don't like it. I don't care what other people say. It's a guy that has invested in the like Nigel Ray. We all know them. The people that gave a lot of money, you like it or don't like it, they invested. They give a lot of work, jobs to players. We made a lot of money from it. And at least you need to meet them and say, guys, what do you think? What are you thinking about? What do you don't like? I had a great conversation with Bruce that day. I never met him before. I met him that day. And I said to Bill, let's keep on moving. Let's keep on meeting them. Nothing happened. I never met Bruce Craig again. Why not engaging with people that are there, that are finding problems, and at the end of the day, they're using the same players, the same assets, that we need to make the game bigger. This is the things that it's a modern way of thinking. I have no issue of speaking with private equity. I have business. I borrow money. I invest in the private sector. Why not speak to them? No, we wait 1 year to meet them in March to just give a PowerPoint presentation. I don't need PowerPoint presentation. We don't need PowerPoint. We need things to see, guys, what is your vision of the game? What is CBC going to do? Are you going to go free to air? Are you going to go direct to consumer? Are the fans going to be have a road to watch the game? All those are the things that the media then ask afterwards, and you're already on the back foot.
How difficult is it, Gus, with World Rugby being in Dublin? By at the minute, there is no global season. You're in the Southern Hemisphere. So, yes, the global season, I think there's a lot of people that agree that they want to see that. But as a governing body of World Rugby, which runs all aspects of the game all the way down from grassroots all the way up to the top level. So having a global season, how much easier will that make the governing body of World Rugby be able to activate different things going forward and be on the same page? Because you've got Bill up in the north, you know, he's obviously in England working out of Dublin, and that's where the head office is. You've got yourself as vice chairman in Argentina, everything that's going on with Sanzar and Super Rugby. But by globalising the season, is it going to make it easier for World Rugby to operate?
I think this, and I don't want to be, probably you guys have experienced as well as I did, this COVID-19, find it very interesting to see how you interact in all times, in time zones, and how you can interact on a very different way. And it's accelerate the Zooms, the Skypes, the what people thought, what is this platform? It's today is like Zoom, yes, put and Skype, that's how you do it. It's the mindset of being forward thinking. And it's not about vertical, it's not about doubling, it's about horizontal. If England has of Scotland, Amar Dodson, you can like it or not, but he has a very strong commercial background, and he likes private equity, as he's shown. If then just bring them in, discuss the idea, as when you play, you need all the leaders on the game to give that bar to raise more, so people, but you have to raise the bar thinking of the others. If you're going to raise the bar thinking of yourself, that's where I have some, no, guys, we are raising the bar to be more competitive, to be more sustainable. With this virus, it's going to get worse. What about the USA, the Canada, the Georgia, the Fijis? Guys, global, it's global. World Rugby is World Rugby. Six Nations, very powerful unit, yes. Guys, we don't want to tell you what to do, but just share with us your vision. Share with Sansar, the other power unit, but let's all move at the same speed. And that's where World Rugby facilitates. It doesn't dictaminate. It facilitates the discussion on a more mindset innovative way.
And then just looking at that, you talked about it then, the powerful unions and the powerful tournaments. And a lot of people outside of the knowledge of what's going on at World Rugby just see the establishment. So the Six Nations countries back in Bill and perhaps the Sanzar countries back in yourself. But a lot of it and the virus that's coronavirus that's going on at the minute has aired, in my opinion, a lot of the issues for the Tier 2 nations and their unions. Some of the Tier 1 nations are now seeing that because of the lack of revenue. Obviously, you've talked about equality across the game. Some of the people's arguments would be it's the big nations that create a lot of the revenue. Is it the fact that you now want a lot of that revenue spread out amongst the game to grow it sustainably? Or is it more a case of we need to give more of the pie to the Tier 2 nations? Because I believe the gap has actually grown over the last 4 years between Tier 1 and Tier 2.
Exactly, and it's grown a lot. It's like every single business, and this is not about a revolution of anarchism, of Robin Hood taking from the rich and giving to the poor. It sounds very nice, but that's not the case. Any successful business cannot operate just by taking away a sustainable planet. It's not fair. What I think we have to make something better with the countries that are established to just be on a revenue share more equal. That's what I mean. And use that not only to revenue share in the emerging nations, but also for the growth of the game in the women's game and in sevens. I strongly believe that. I give you an example. The Nations Cup that I proposed had more income, nearly 30% more income a year in the mainstream. It had a possibility of a woman's bigger women's tournament. The sevens could be on we can do a different series all around the world with regions. And what happened? Because of a power struggle, we closed it down. That's one of the things that we need to work out better. And that was because they didn't trust World Rugby. Six Nations was doing a deal with CBC. We didn't engage CBC. Many things that I can tell you that we did wrong. those things have to change, because that comes to the mindset, Andy, that I just told you, is changing that mindset. You won't have those problems. You will have them before. So Martin Phillips, Mark Dodson, Steve Chu, and now Mark Robinson, Bill Sweeney, the ones that run the business that are thinking on the next 2 years, because that's where they get paid. They have the P&L on this year. They have to be happy. But also you have to be happy above that, that the game will be sustainable in 10 years when they won't be there.
So, Gus, realistically, if you were to take the reins with myself in the wings as well, is so a global season, I think that we can see that that is a real potential opportunity, whether or not you take the reins or Bill carries on with the reins. But what else is realistically could change? I think one of your passions that you've been quite outspoken about is the promotion relegation around the Guinness Six Nations. Is that realistic that that could happen if you were to take the reins, and what else?
That's a philosophy. Promotion relegation, again, that's been politicized as a... It's easy to put the elephant in the bazaar and show the tail of the elephant is the problem. That's not the problem. It was a pathway, showing a pathway. That's the mentality of the growth. If you are always closed, you cannot show growth. Or you have to find other alternatives. I'm not saying, you know, maybe you can find other alternatives. The global calendar is part of the mindset. Again, I sorry that I insist, but it's part of the mindset. It's one more part. I understand that people want to see clubs and country aligned, everyone happy, players resting, and everyone happy. That's quite challenging. Again, depends how you put that mindset. Players first, then the calendar, and everyone together. Simple. It sounds simple. It's very complex. You have the power struggles. You have what do I take from here, the revenue shares, whatever. The most important thing that we need is to have that mindset and start discussing now with this virus, with the shortfall that will happen, what could be best for the game now as a shortfall and in the next 10 years.
So, Gus, if we do take the reins, again, without trying to abandon about it, how will it look? So if you've got the reins and we're back to normal in 6 to 12 months, how do you see the game looking? So a global season, everything will be lined up in terms of World Rugby being the governing body. But what else do you see that can actually physically, realistically happen to change the game of rugby?
Well, that's a good point. I would like to see the strategic starting to be put in place in after this turbulence and turbulent times. I think the first thing would be to just understand the shortfall and the implication Q1 and Q2 of next year. That if I'm a finance guy, if I have my finance team, I will be asking, keep me track of that part that is important, as you guys and everyone is doing now at the moment in the world economy. And then drive with the players and the private equity and the owners, drive that blueprint. I would be very happy by now to the end of the year if I win to start those, call it, discussions about how the shape of a different competition would look like. And I would think that it would be very similar to the Nation Cup that you know, that you heard, but giving solutions to the pathway as well of emerging nations. If we do innovative investments in Samoa, in camps with Samoa players in the UK, for example, or different ways of doing things that can help that innovation and that investment come in. The same with allocating in the women's game some ramp up towards their game. And I'm a passionate with sevens. I think sevens can bring a lot of the growth as well, to see how you put regional tournaments as well. So those would be the key issues of 1 year of working hard on the blueprint. And I always would count on you on all the strategical parts of, you know, on the blind side and on the upton side, coming all over the place.
Mate, I'll just turn up to the events. I'll just rock up, mate. I'll be the face. I'll be the face of it.
One of the other things I wanted to talk to you about, Gus, was obviously people are talking about the voting system, and we've all seen across the press how the voting system's going down at the minute. And again, it seems to us just in the media that a lot of the power is with the bigger nations. Is that something that you want to change as well, perhaps to get some of the tier two nations a better voice?
Yeah, I'm Argentina, being all the history and you guys being there and what's not and the history, we got a third vote 1 year ago, 1 year and a half ago, and we had to fight for it with teeth and nails. And I find it really unfair, that journey, having to explain to a very conservative board why Argentina deserved the same voice than Scotland, Ireland, Wales, England, New Zealand, Australia. I find it really unfair, to be honest. I feel exactly the same with other countries. If you have good management, if you have a good team, if you've been playing World Cups or not, or but you're in the system, why not have a voice? I don't understand it. Why not? You guys, you're the same. I think that way. That's how our generation think. I think that we guys will be all in agreement that that's that in a democratic system, you say, hold on. You wouldn't have a team tomorrow walking into the Leicester changing room and thinking that, okay, guys, we're not equal. That was 20 years ago, you know, when you had the core of the old guys with a, today you wouldn't find any kind of leader coming to a young guy saying, you shut your mouth, you don't have a say here. It doesn't work anymore. People have more than have a say. There's more respect among each other. This question about worldwide citizenship, it happens. It's not something that, and that needs to change. Well, rugby has been carrying this way of doing things that is from 40 years ago, and it's not fair.
One of the things you've talked about, Gus, a lot is the, and it's been in the media a lot, is bringing out a new computer game. Is that just a gimmick, or is that something you think could actually change something for the game worldwide?
I love technology. One of my freak sides of things is I love technology. Part of my business is, and that's why it has been very successful, is how to innovate the cost of producing from different cameras. I won't bore you as well. And I always been looking, and I always look at young generations. I produce content for young people for the United States, and I always look at that, not in rugby, how they work. And I look at my daughters, and I look at the friends, and I look at how when I go to different, how do you call the fairs of technology, look how young people engage. It's so different how we engage. That is, it's amazing. So, and we haven't achieved that. It's not about a game. It's about how they, it's about second screening. It's about what do they do watching a game? Would they be looking, okay, they cannot afford an £80 ticket in Murrayfield. Or £60 ticket in Murrayfield, or £20 ticket, or they've been at home and it's raining and they're watching Scotland, England for the Six Nations. It was a very interesting game.
It's horrific.
We agree, correct? It was. Yeah. I have nothing against it. It was one of the terrible, most challenging games I watched in the last 40 years. Do you think that a young kid will just wait? Their eyes will hurt. They will not stand 20 minutes of reset scrums and maul. They need to have something else at the same time. If you look at the kids watching rugby or football, and they are all the time being hit by technology. And this is what I'm saying. Second screen, do we need to bring them more content to them in that moment that we have made of rugby, you know, to keep them in the same? Do we need them when they go to play Fortnite? Do we need them to bring from Fortnite something to call that rugby sense on them, and maybe a shell of the England rugby team in the buying in the fort? You know what I mean? These things keep on the young kids work on a nearly 24 hour digital brain. It's amazing. They sleep. I don't know how they do. My kids don't sleep. I don't know what they have. I take them to sleep. I take them the computer away. Sometimes I find my daughters with the computer and TikToks constant. We are not engaged in that. We don't have an innovative department. I would put straight away an innovative department for Hawkeyes. Why don't we use the lines of offside lines to put players onside if we need to free some space in the game? Those things that we don't challenge, we keep on going to being like it was again. All eyes has always been the same. Let's challenge. Maybe we get it wrong, we go back, we get it right. Technology is very easy to implement. It's very cheap now. So that's my view.
Mate, I've heard that Bill Beaumont's an absolute savage on Call of Duty. So,
Call of Duty. I tried Assassin's Creed yesterday, and I was shot in 30 seconds. It's impossible. The guys come in, they shoot you. I tried COD once. I go like this. 20 seconds later, I receive a bullet from I don't know where. Gone. I said, guys, stop this. It's impossible to play. I know it's. I just play by myself. With no online, I cut the Wi-Fi and I go by myself doing missions, completely bored. I get shot. As soon as I go online, I get shot in 21 seconds.
Gus, I should say, if you put out a TikTok video and that goes viral on Rugby Pass, I'm telling you now, you'll get the votes of, well, we're not allowed to vote, are we? It's all the nations, but you'll get the love of the nation. Get a video out on TikTok, mate. That'll work.
And just a little request from me, Gus. When we do make this game, when you are the chairman and I'm your vice chairman, can you have retired players on there? And if there are retired players, can I have my speed at 99 and make myself slimmer than I was when I played?
All right, Gus. Thank you so much for coming on the show, mate, and best of luck with becoming chairman.
Guys, a pleasure again. It's always lovely to speak to legends of the game and that I had so much fun again. Thank you very much for your support.
Thanks, Gus.
Thank you, Gus. Cheers, mate. Top bloke.
Top bloke.
Mate, I tell you, but what a good-looking man still.
Yes.
His man cave.
Wow.
Mate, enjoyed that, mate. Enjoyed that. What I like about him, I like Bill Beaumont as well. Like, I really do. And I've contacted him 4 times and he's not replied, so I don't like him anymore. I talked him up, mate, Call of Duty. Apparently, he's on his hands and knees in a simulation doing that. But and a lot of people agree, and if Bill carries on taking the reins, that the game does need freshening up. All the things that he said there is all the things that I'm personally passionate about. The online content, that's what we do for Rugby Pass. It's what we've done with the podcast. We've changed the way in which people consume media. And I think, albeit Gus didn't give us maybe the answers that I was asking, I wanted a straight answer in terms of, what are you going to do? So what is going to be the big, big difference? So albeit not giving the answers, because there's going to be a load of loopholes that he needs to jump through, what I do like is that he is a young man in terms of business. He's got a great standing in the game and he's rustling through a few feathers. I love it. Do you know what I mean? And if we can get behind him, and the hand's almost been forced now with COVID-19, that people need to look at the way, well, not just life, but we're talking about rugby in terms of how the seasons carry on from here on in, you know, what happens to the Tier 2 nations. Everyone's now looking at it properly and everyone's got a voice. So, mate, genuinely, I'm going to back him. That's what I would like to see. I'd like to see a change.
He's got your vote.
Mate, well, I'm his vice-captain, mate.
He's got your vote, Jim, but you don't get a vote. But more interestingly to me, what did you just say about the feathers? He's doing what with feathers?
Ruffling them.
Oh, I thought you said rustling. I could have sworn
you
said
rustling. Yeah, you did.
Rustling feathers. That was a Jimism there. But, you know, you're dead right. Listen, you can see the passion that it's pouring out of him, isn't it? And, you know, he was very honest then and candid around how he answered questions. But, you know, one of the things that's been put across, and you know, he wouldn't ever badmouth Sir Bill Beaumont. You know, he has been his vice chairman. But part of the reason he is running, and I'm reading between the lines here, is there has been no change in 4 years. You know, we are still sort of led by Bill Beaumont as the chairman, and nothing's happened around the global game. Nothing has happened in terms of trying to bring these Tier 2 nations closer to the Tier 1 nations. The establishment is still what it is, and that's why Gus is trying to change things and rustle everything. And you know, it's phenomenal to see his passion and hear his passion, and it's also, you know, even more phenomenal to see someone that's retired and looks even more, you know, looks even better looking now than he did when he played. I mean, he's retired about how many years ago is he retired, and he's looking younger and younger than when he played,
mate. No stress, mate.
Oh, dream boat of a bloke. And I actually generally hope he gets the job now. The more I listen to him and the more you hear his passion, and we're seeing snippets in the press, aren't we? I think he's the man for change. And perhaps, like you said, Jim, one good thing that's come out of this COVID-19 is that it's evident that change needs to happen sooner rather than later. And I think if you go with the same old of Sir Bill Beaumont and Bernard Laporte, you know, you're going to get the same again. Slow, incremental changes that perhaps what might not even take place for another 4 years.
Well, from an Argentinian legend to an Australian legend, we had Wallabies record try scorer David Campese on our superfan subscription service at patreon.com for a chat last week. Here's a little taste of what's on offer.
Do you think Eddie Jones has maybe got the right attitude with England, how he's got them England playing the way that England play?
But which way is the way England play? They haven't never changed the way they've played since I played them.
Well, that's the point, isn't it? Like they were successful playing their style. Is that what you're saying?
Coaches are unique as well. I mean, Eddie Jones, I played club rugby with Eddie Jones. Michael Checker played at Randwick. You had the Ellis play at Randwick. Bob Dwyer played at Randwick, you know, and that was the running style back in when Bob started with the Ellis. Eddie's, you know, he's been around a long time. He went to, was quite interested in the World Cup last year. Obviously after they beat the All Blacks, played great rugby. But the week before, the Kiwis played fantastic rugby against Ireland. So, you know, in world rugby, in any game of rugby, if the last week's game doesn't really help you the next week, and you see that the Kiwis thought this is going to be easy to play, and England just defended and smashed them. But what happened was interesting that on the Sunday, it was South Africa-Wales. And I was in the box, one of the VIP boxes. And at halftime, Eddie Jones and John Mitchell never smiles. They've walked into the VIP with the world's biggest smile on their face thinking, we've got this, you know, we've got this one, because it wasn't a great game. Anyway, the week after, what happens? South Africa absolutely smash him. It just reminded me that in the World Cup 91, we beat New Zealand in Lansdowne Road. You know, we played pretty well. But there's another game to go. So mentally, you've got to turn up for that game. The week before does not help you. And I think the England players thought this is going to be easy. You know, and obviously you're losing players. You lost one of their props who was a key runner. All of a sudden, Dan Coles comes on. He's played 20 minutes every game. Now he's got to play 60 minutes. It was just tactics, you know. So Eddie was outsmarted. And now I see that he's going, well, I've got to change. And instead of telling the players what to do, we're going to ask them questions. I mean, realistically, he's been coaching for 30 years and he still can't get it right. So really.
There you go. Just head to patreon.com/therugbypod if you like the sound of that, and sign up to get loads of extra interviews and features for just a few quid a month. Well, we've seen quite a lot of members of the rugby community doing great things for charity in recent weeks, but there aren't too many who do more than friend of the show, Ed Jackson, and he's got a new challenge lined up this week, so we can have a chat to him now. How are you, mate?
Yeah, not too bad, thanks. How are you guys?
Jacko, we're very good. I'm sat on the sofa recording the podcast. I'm slightly stiff from going on the Watt bike, I'll be honest. Apart from that, mate, the future's looking just okay. How's it looking for you, mate? So we record on a Monday. The podcast goes out on a Tuesday. What will you be doing on Tuesday of this week? Tell the masses out there, because I think it's ridiculous.
When this goes out, I'll be halfway up or halfway down my parents' staircase, probably ripping their new carpet to shreds, because I've put something out there which I'm kind of regretting already. But I've signed up for it now, so I've got to actually crack on with it. I'm climbing the height of Everest on my parents' stairs. I don't know why, obviously for charity, but it seemed like a good idea at the time. And now I've been contacted by lots of people who have done similar challenges climbing stairs, and they're like, what are you doing? It was horrific. I'd never do it again. So yeah, feeling mixed emotions at the moment, I think.
And so why are you doing that then, Jacko? I've been keeping updated on your blogs. You know, we did a documentary on Rugby Pass with you, so I know your story. But we're all in lockdown now. I think some of us are going slightly insane, like, yes, shut up! That's the kids screaming downstairs. Beck's got the lasagna on the go, mate. Bring a chainsaw. It's Monday. So some of us are going mad, mate, at home. So just tell us why you're doing this challenge. You're quite vocal around mental health and also bettering yourself and all these things that you've done, you know, past your injury, to be where you are now in terms of your physical and mental well-being. But why this?
Yeah, well, two main reasons, really. One, to try and raise some money for charity, because obviously it's a tough time for all the charities at the moment. We saw what Captain Tom did was unbelievable, or what he's doing. He's raised all that money for the NHS. And I'm also raising some money for the NHS, but I want to try and support some of the other charities I work with as well. So that's the first aim. And to be able to ask people to donate money to the challenge, it's got to be difficult. And that's the second point of doing something a bit ridiculous. But the other thing is, we all just need a bit of light at the moment, a bit of fun. And hopefully we're going to open it up. We are going to open it up through social media channels for other people to get involved at home. And we're going to have a bit of a laugh with it. You know, I'm pitching a tent at the bottom of the stairs. I'm camping in my parents' kitchen for the full duration and stuff like that. So hopefully it'll just bring a bit of light to this situation that we're in at the moment. I know you need that more than anyone at the moment, Jim.
He certainly does, Jacko. Well, that was going to be my question, actually, because the challenge you're doing for anyone is absolutely crazy, isn't it? Climbing Everest, or the height of Everest, by the stairs at your mum and dad's house. But then you're adding to it by camping at the bottom of the stairs in a tent. Now, surely there's a nice king-size double bed or whatever it is at the top of the stairs, that when you just finish your last leg of the day, just jump in that, or maybe a shower. How crazy can you be to want to do that as well?
Well, mate, you can't Bear Grylls it and just pretend you're camping. You've got to try and do the real thing. I think it'll just be a bit of fun. Trust me, I've got a nice comfy duvet and a mat underneath. And I'm not going to be eating just rice and lentils like you normally would if you're up Everest. I am going to be in my parents' kitchen, so I'm going to be taking advantage of the fridge. But I just thought it'd be, you know, a bit more of a challenge and a bit more fun to just stay in that tent until I finish the full duration. I don't know if that's, I'm hoping for 4 days, but it might end up being a lot longer than that, because of my injury, I've only got really one working side of my body. So the whole thing's going to be I'm using my right leg for the whole thing, so it's going to be about 89,000 single leg step ups over the next 4 days. So how my body's going to react, we're going to have to wait and see. But hopefully I'll be summiting, if you like, outside my parents' bedroom on Friday evening.
Oh, geez. What will be happening when you summit the final steps outside your mum and dad's bedroom? We don't want to hear about that, Jekko. We just want to hear about your challenge.
Yeah, well, hopefully lots of champagne, we'll see.
Jekko, how many hours in the day will you be doing it then? Have you worked? I saw you working out some calculations and spreadsheets, which is my forte. How many hours in the day are you going to be going up and down? Because going up is one thing, and going down is another thing in terms of us mountaineers, Jekko, that are out there to the millions to tell them, like, that, you know, the different pressures on different joints. But you're going to go up, down, up, down. So how many hours a day are you going to be doing that?
I'm going to be working out between 6 and 8 hours a day, yeah, of actual work. But again, like I said, I don't know if I might pull up after the first day and realise it's going to take a lot longer. But yeah, I mean, obviously taking breaks in between. I'm going to have to sort of plan it. I've had to plan it to try and give myself the best possible chance. If I just went for it from the start and tried to like rattle off a 15-hour day or something, I'd probably just blow up for the rest of it. So I'm trying to spread it out a little bit. However, when I worked it all out, it was a lot more than I anticipated. So I think I'm going to do it in distances rather than time. So I'm hoping to do about 400 meters vertically an hour, and then just spread that out over the day and over the week, and asking people to come and get involved as well. Like in the morning, I'll do a live slot from 8 till 9, and then another one from 5:30 to 6:30 to encourage people whilst we're all stuck in our houses to do a bit of exercise and have a bit of fun. And we'll try and get some cool people on to chat to as well, people who have actually climbed Everest, and we can make comparisons between my steps and the real mountain.
And I know you've done a lot of mountaineering, Jekko, and raising a huge amount of money for various different causes as well, but some of the issues when you're actually climbing Everest itself, to do with altitude and all that, you perhaps won't get in your mum and dad's house climbing the stairs. But what issues are you perceiving? Is it the chafe that you're really worried about, or are there other things to do with your feet, to do with blisters perhaps, that you've got to prepare for?
Yeah, mate, the chafe is probably going to be an issue, but I've stocked up on Vaz, and I've also got no sensation down there either. So that might work in my favour because of my accident. So I'll either probably feel blood dripping on the carpet, or I won't feel anything at all. So, yeah, I mean, imagine that if you want, but probably don't. But I think the main issue is going to be the repetition, you know, 89,000 reps of the same movement. It's going to be, yeah, feet, hips, back. And because I move so strangely now and have weaknesses in different places, I think it's going to be that sort of accumulative stress on my body. We'll see what happens. Like, obviously no altitude and the temperature is going to be all right, but I think because I'm going from 0 meters to 8,848 and back again, normally, you know, Everest, your base camp's at 5,500 meters already, and trust me, this isn't gonna be anywhere near as hard as Everest, but the problems involved are going to be quite different, I think.
And of course, you mentioned you're doing this for charity, three charities, so do you want to tell us about them and how people can donate?
Yeah, so the three charities I'm supporting, first one is Wings for Life, who a spinal cord injury research charity, and they're trying to find a cure for spinal cord injuries. And I know, obviously, you had Hambo's a big friend of the show as well, and, you know, people who have complete spinal cord injuries, they're not their only hope, but the hope they hold out for is the fact that there'll be a medical breakthrough to find a cure, and Wings for Life are the biggest funders of that. They had to miss out on their biggest fundraising event this year because of coronavirus, the World Run. So I'm just trying to help fill a bit of a gap in that fundraising void, so hopefully none of the research gets affected. The next one is Forever Friends Appeal, who support our NHS hospital in Bath. Obviously spent quite a few months there after my accident. Loved the staff. They're under a lot of pressure at the moment, so trying to support the NHS, of course. And the last one, I'm still raising money to try and build a spinal unit in Nepal. So the last charity is Neverest Orthopaedics, and hopefully this will take another chunk out of that and bring the date forward for when we can start building it. To get involved, yeah, I mean, I'm going to be documenting everything on my Instagram, @JacksonA, but the actual fundraising link is on virginmoneygiving.com/@JacksonA. The link is in my bio on Instagram.
All right, Ed, thank you very much for coming on the show, and best of luck with those stairs, mate.
Thanks, guys. Goody, you fancy doing some with me or what?
Oh, he does.
I like the way you've left that late.
I feel like you've got a good hour in you, mate. Come on, it's for charity.
Climbing the stairs with my knees, mate. I'll give some a go, definitely, yeah. Drop me a message, mate, and we'll work it out.
Cheers, guys.
Cheers, Jekko. Good on you, mate.
Good, man. Good luck, Chip. Good bloke.
I mean, he's called you out. Now, I've been watching some of the videos, and he's going full gear as well. And you can't use the fact that you've got a bad knee. Jacko broke his neck.
He's going
up and down. What a madman. Look, I mean, I might do a few. I can't even. I've got zero productivity in my day. But good, you've got no excuses, mate. He spoke about the charities and the funding that's now missing because of COVID-19. I hate saying that word, coronavirus, COVID-19, but we have to keep saying it because we are in unprecedented times. Keep saying that word. But I had a text today from the Hambo Foundation. So they're doing similar things, and they're doing a kind of similar challenge-based thing that people can get behind. It's called the 2.6 Challenge. And I'm going to read you just the kind of bio from it and just let people know how they can get involved. So we want you to join the Team Hambo this Sunday, the 26th of April. I can't believe it's April the 26th, but it is, in the hashtag 2.6 Challenge. Now, the 2.6 Challenge can be anything you like, but must include the numbers 2.6 or 26. So, Goody, that means 26 hours you can go to sleep for if you want. So get creative and have some fun with it. For everyone who sets up a fundraising page and completes a 2.6 challenge, they'll get sent a Get Busy Living medal in recognition of their efforts. Some examples of the challenges are walk up and down the stairs 26 times. Well, Jacko's doing that about 26,000 times. Here's one for you, Goody. Juggle for 26 minutes or just for 2.6 minutes. 26 minutes of continuous passing and catching. Absolutely not. Put on some music and dance for 26 minutes. But the Matt Hampson Foundation and the Get Busy Living Centre are doing that because, look, as we know, the finances in the world at the minute are not in a good place, and the charities are being hit most with that. So good on you, Hambo, as always, and good luck to Jacko as well.
Would you brush your teeth for 26 minutes? Because you haven't done that in about 26 years.
I genuinely think they're that brittle they fall out.
Yeah, they would, actually. What do you reckon? Do you reckon my challenge could be eat 26 Star Bars?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I do that most days anyway, so happy
Bet
days.
Bet you can't.
How much, Jim?
What, 26?
Yeah.
Another 100 quid to the NHS. If you eat 26 Star Bars in front of me...
£5,000 to Hambo. Will you donate £5,000 to Hambo?
£500 to Hambo. If you eat 26 Star Bars, 500 quid to Hambo.
Do I get a break in between or not?
No. After another, and the cheque's in the post.
Well, the 2007 Premiership final was broadcast again on BT Sport over the weekend. Any memories that you guys can share with us?
I didn't see it, actually, but I was reminded of it. My mum and dad messaged me, said they saw it. All I remember from that game was I scored an absolute worldie of a try. I ran it in from, I think it was about 40 metres. Skinned Willie Walker, skinned Ian Bolshaw. Skinned Ryan Lamb. He got run over about 15 times anyway in that final by the Tua Langies and Sarah Rambini. So, yeah. But I think one of my conversions nearly hit the corner flag. It was that bad. So I've been getting pelters on social media for that. But I just remember, worldie of a try, probably my best ever try. I didn't score many, but probably my best ever try that I scored.
Was that 2007?
Yeah, against Gloucester. You weren't involved, Jim.
No, I got a medal, though. I still got a medal.
Well, we did it last week, and we thought we'd get in on the act again when it comes to giving a fresh take on old games and take a trip down memory lane in your careers, but not so much in the Heineken Cup or Premiership finals. This week, it's Jim's fight with Ebenezer Beth, and you guys are going to do a alternative commentary for us, aren't you?
Okay, so there's a line out for South Africa here, and Scotland are actually winning in South Africa. Oh, bit of argy-bargy. Jim Hamilton comes over, tries to give Ebenezer Beth the big... Oh, no, you just pushed him, Jim. Pushed him with both your hands there. You were well hard, aren't you?
Well, it must have been bad, because I got yellow card off the back of it. So you're right, Goody. Scotland playing South Africa in Nelspruit, where Heineken Mayor's from, actually. So it was a big game for them. It was a four-man line-out. I've absolutely blitzed. I think I've gone straight through the beast. Is that Dwayne Vermeule? I don't even know if he was playing, but let's say he was. I've blitzed him as well. And I've got to the man who was giving it loads on the way in. The guy whose arms look like my legs, and he has had the cov skin just north of the Hebrides, Hamilton's hand, left hand, straight to the face. He's got whiplash. He's got a stinger. And I've been yellow carded, which is ridiculous.
Well, the first thing about it is you give the penalty away for coming at the side. So there's your first penalty. And then you go and push Ebenezer Beth in the face. And just look at the fear now. You've pushed him And now look at the fear. You've got, you're backing away. He's coming at you. You're backing away. You're trying to hide behind what you and Murray and some other prop. Is that Chunk? Who is it?
No, yeah, that's Tim Swinson. We don't ever mention his name on it.
Okay. You absolutely shit yourself when he's come back at you. Now you're like, ha ha ha, look at my mate. He's going to have you.
Mate, how do you get yellow carded for that? How do you get yellow carded for throwing a handbag?
There's the replay. You're behind someone. You're the classic wind-up merchant. You're behind someone, mate, waiting for the ref to get in between you, and you've just bottled it. He would have filled, mate, you in. And you're like, please give me a yellow. Roman Pratt, please can I have a yellow card here, because Etzebeth is going to fill me in.
What do you think of Roman Pratt there?
Oh, mate, it's the right decision. It's 100%. Oh, my God.
That is embarrassing, mate. I tell you, what a place South Africa is. Do you know that game is where Siya Kolisi made his debut? Mate, embarrassing when I watched that back. But, mate, if you ask him, he got whiplash, apparently, and he couldn't walk for 2 or 3 days after, so...
From one embarrassing scene to another for Jim, are you guys up for a quick quarantine quiz?
No.
Oh, yes, let's. Let's put Jim to bed again, shall we?
It's a mixture of rugby and general knowledge and is a best of five. Jim, you're actually a few hundred quid down after the first 3 weeks, and there's another 100 quid going to be donated to the NHS by whoever loses. Have you been revising or?
But revising what? I don't know the questions.
All right, first question, and it is the best of five. Only three men have started more at lock for Scotland than Jim. Name two of them.
Goody. Jim.
I got it first.
Go on, Jim.
Scott Murray.
Correct.
And Nathan Hines.
He's wrong. George.
Oh,
he's wrong.
My goodness.
So I've started more for Scotland than Nathan Hines.
Yes, Jim. That's, yes, good. You have.
Goody, do you want to have a go at this?
It's got to be one of the grey boys, surely.
Mate, my mind's blown by this. The fact that I'm one of the top second rows to start.
Johnny Gray.
No.
Incorrect. Scotland second rows, mate. Who cares? The
Stuart
shit.
Grimes.
That's correct, Jim. So you got one point.
Yes.
Jim's leading.
It was a question about himself, so of course he's going to be leading.
Well, it's not. It's a question about other people, mate, that are better than me.
Question number two. Who sang with the Wailers?
Goody. Bonnie and the Wailers, wasn't it?
Bob Marley.
Correct, Jim.
Jim. Who's Bonnie?
Bonnie?
Who's
Bonnie and the Wailers?
I was in bed with Bob Marley last night. I thought, of course I'm going to remember, mate.
It's Bonnie and the Clydes. It was Bonnie and the Clydes. I don't know
Bonnie
my music.
Clyde, that's Beyonce, mate. I'm killing it. Yes. He's gutted.
Question number three. Goody's got to get this to stay alive. How many successful penalties did Goody kick in his premiership career? Closest wins.
Jim.
Oh.
Yes, Jim. What's the answer?
65.
Oh my God, that's ridiculous. It's Jim, I probably did that in a season. In my whole Premiership career, I'm going to say 700.
The correct answer is 465.
Penalties, or is that the points?
Penalties.
Sorry, I thought you meant how many penalties he'd given away.
All right, question number four, and Jim is still leading 2-1. Who is Justin Timberlake married to?
Jim.
No idea.
Jessica Biel.
No, it's not Biel. Goody, Jessica Biel. It's not Jessica Biel. You can't have that.
Jessica Timberlake, mate. Jessica Timberlake, mate, I'm taking that.
You're not having that. That's like me saying Bonnie.
No, it's not.
Bob, so I was going to finish, with Bob Marley. Bonnie, like Marley, Bonnie Bob Marley, that's what I was going to say.
Hit us with the next one, then.
Okay, so we're not going to give you Jessica Biel, then.
Okay, so what's the next question, then?
Let's go to the last question. So, Goody, you have to keep this to force a tiebreaker. How many red cards have there been in the history of the Home, Five, and Six Nations? Closest wins.
25.
24.
And the correct answer is 17.
Well done, James.
Oh, God.
Well done, Jim.
Thank you very much. Matt, I know my ruggers, mate.
Well, hold on. You know Bob Marley and
Jessica Biel.
Jessica Biel. Who's Jessica Biel?
Mate, you didn't even know who it was, mate. At least I'm down with Justin Timbersnake or whatever his name is.
All right, let's go to Jim's favourite feature. Do you want to introduce it, Jim?
Yeah, well, it's going down an absolute storm. So basically, we get a riddle every week, and it's called Jim Will Solve It, because, get it? Jim Will Solve It. Riddle me this, riddle me that. It's time for Jim Will Solve It. Blowback.
What are the next three letters in this combination? O, T, T, F, F, OTTSS.
So what are the next three letters in this combination? OTTFFSS. Otifisser. Otifisser.
Got it.
What are you thinking, Jim? Talk us through your thought process when you're looking at these letters.
All I'm seeing is OTT, so over the top, as in over the top platform, for FFSS, for fuck's sake, That's all I'm thinking when I'm reading this.
What did you say then?
Over the top, for fuck's sake,
Mate, one of them's right, I think. One of them is right there.
Four. Give me a hint. I need a hint, lads.
You've got one of those right. One of those words is correct, James.
I need a hint, though. I need something that's going to spark off my creative part of my brain.
Don't just think words. What are you thinking, Jim?
I'm thinking officer.
Don't just think letters, James.
I'm thinking numbers, then.
Wow. Here we go.
So I'm thinking numbers.
OTTFFSS. What number is that?
Seven.
Seven could be in there, James, yes.
Seven numbers. One, two, three. Well, I haven't got a pen to write anything down.
You're getting there. You were just saying something. What were you just saying, James?
I haven't got...
No, just before pen. That. Just before that.
I need to write something down.
What were you counting?
Numbers, the letters. What?
Go on then.
Yeah, so I was trying to get how many letters it was to get to O.
Go on then, look at it. No, look at the letters.
Yeah.
And then start counting from one.
So A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J. No,
look at
one,
the letters. Look at the letters and start counting from one. What's after one, Jim?
Two.
What's after two, Jim?
Three.
What's after four, Jim?
Four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, ten.
So what would the letters be, James?
Got it.
Here he is. Here he is.
So what is it? What are the next three letters?
E-N-T.
Yes. Yay. Riddle me this, riddle me that. Jim took about half an hour to get that.
I'll take that as a win, lads. Riddle me this, riddle me that. Jim will solve it. Get it? Back.
Okay, let's move on to the rumour mill. Any rumours floating around, boys?
Dan Carter. We saw that he left the Kobe Steelers last week as the Japanese top league has been postponed or cancelled for the rest of the season. So apparently he might be joining Rugby United New York, James.
Yes, I've heard MLR is a pull for him.
We're going to have to do a trip out there, aren't we?
No word of a lie, I dreamt about Dan Carter last night. So I don't know whether I must have been reading about him online before I went to bed, or, you know, it was the fact that I was in a headlock with Bob Marley. I dreamt about him. How weird's that?
Very strange.
Any more rumours floating around, boys?
John Wells, he's gone to Italy, which I think is good. What a coach he's been, eh? What a servant. We should give him a shout out. I'm sure he's a big listener of the podcast and loves his social media. Loved him as a coach. Proper old school. The swan song, mate. He's leaving Newcastle to go to Italy. No idea why. So he deserves it. He deserves a bit of a swan song. I'm not saying that that's the end of him, but I think he's off to the Italian club leagues, if that's what you want to call it out there.
Yeah, he's going to Colorno, not Colon, Colorno. He's brilliant coach, Wellesley. He was so honest with people, which is pretty hard to find in coaching these days, isn't it? I remember one day he looked at me when I was up at Newcastle. He goes, "Gildy, I'm the defensive coach here. I know you're going to make fuck all tackles, so we'll hide you on the blind side wing." And he said, "Don't even pretend you're going to try and put your fucking head in anywhere that hurts. So you're going to be hiding on the blind side wing, make no tackles, get no injuries, and we'll be all right." Wellesley's a legend. England coach as well. Leicester coach from the successful era as well. Brilliant guy, brilliant coach, very honest. Wish him luck in Italy. Talking about Leicester, though, Jonah Holmes.
Oh, I've heard.
Yeah, he could be leaving Leicester, Jim. You heard where?
Wales.
Yes, he's Welsh.
Luke Narraway's club, Dean Ryan, the Dragons, mate.
Ah, the Dragons.
Yeah, there's not a lot out there. No disrespect to Jonah Holmes, mate, but he's off. What are Leicester going to do for wingers?
They got Nandolo.
And what? I know.
But he's the size of two wingers, mate. So yeah,
very true, mate. Very true.
Right, well, we would be usually going to social media questions at the stage, but since the podcast has been quite long already, we're going to put some social media questions and answers on patreon.com/therugbypod, so you can go on there and check it out. We're going to move on to the good, the bad, and the ugly, which is brought to you by Suns again this week, isn't it, Goody?
Yes, how's your lid, Jim?
Still there, so I can't see it going any other way now, but back up or across, and hopefully across the other way as well, which will give me good coverage. So big thanks to Suns.
Yeah, it's certainly working. Using the shampoo, tablets, vitamins, and the topical solution means that Jim Hamilton still has a head of hair, and it is regrowing, and my lovely mop is getting thicker by the day.
Hair loss is an important issue a lot of men don't talk about, but Suns are helping to change that and offering a solution. They have a range of pharmaceutically licensed and medically proven products for preventing hair loss. Their free online consultation with specialist physicians takes less than 2 minutes, and delivery takes just a few days. They deliver results in 9 out of 10 men, and all for a reasonable monthly cost with no hidden costs or charges. So give baldness the boot and go to suns.co.uk and use the code RUGBYPOD10 to get your first month for just £10. That's sons.co.uk, and the code is RUGBYPOD10, so go and check them out.
Yeah, good. Obviously, no rugby to talk about per se, but lots of fundraising. We've had Ed Jackson on. He's doing a brilliant thing this week. But other stuff around the game. Mako Vunipola, pretty good.
Yeah.
We all perhaps saw it, watched it on Rugby Pass. He's won the FIFA tournament. He's won the FIFA Rugby Pass best rugby player in the world.
Mate, there were some really good characters on there. Dennis Buckley from Connacht. Didn't say a word, mate. Didn't say a word, but he was lethal on there.
Silent assassin, is he?
Genji was unbelievable with Watford. But yeah, there was a £2,000 prize for the winner. And because Mako is one of them blokes that we all hate, he's good at everything, but he's hanging, so it don't matter. He won, mate. £2,000 goes to charity, Goody. You're right.
Yeah, so awesome from Mako to donate the £2,000 prize money to the Captain Tom Moore Fund. What else was good? Twickenham Stadium is now being opened for NHS staff and key workers as a coronavirus testing facility. So that's good news.
Very good.
That they can all get tested. It's great that the ground's being put to good use, just like the Principality Stadium that we mentioned last week. But the good this week, we spoke to Augustin Pichot earlier, and World Rugby has created an £80 million relief fund to help relieve the financial pressure on the global game from coronavirus. So a massive statement of intent from World Rugby. So they get the good this week. The bad, a few bad things around the game, really. First and foremost, we're going to start off in New Zealand, Andy Rowe. Job losses have been announced already at the Crusaders, and they won't be the last ones to announce staff being made redundant, so that's not great to see. What else was bad? Wayne Pivac revealed that 3 players have had coronavirus, which isn't great. Hopefully they're all on the road to recovery, if not already recovered. But the bad this week goes to a story behind Malcolm Marks, the amazing hooker, and a host of other Southern Hemisphere players are still stuck in Japan and unable to travel home after the late decision to call off the top league in Japan meant they all got stuck out there before all the flights were allowed to depart. They missed all the flights, the last flights going back to South Africa. So unfortunately for those boys, they're stuck out in Japan. So a bit of bad news for them and their families this week. And then the ugly. There is only one ugly thing this week, and it is pretty ugly, and it comes from Fiji. The Fijian Rugby Union chairman, Francis Keane, World Rugby are investigating him after allegations of homophobia and discrimination. He was attempting to secure a place on World Rugby's executive committee, but is now under pressure to withdraw from that due to the allegations. And he's also convicted of manslaughter in 2007, so not a great look for the game.
Oh my goodness.
Thanks, Goody, and you've got a few shout outs to finish off with, haven't you guys?
Yes, we have, Andy Rowe. We've got a few big shout outs. This one's to Bath Uni RFC, who've raised over £8,000 for the NHS. They've been doing loads of challenges like 1,000 kilometres on spin bikes. So keep up the good work, guys. Raising money for an unbelievable cause, as we know the NHS are.
Yeah, well done, the Bath Uni boys. And a big shout out to Paul Hyde, who has run a marathon on a treadmill in his garage for the NHS, despite overcoming coronavirus himself just a few weeks ago. His brother Stu has been in touch, and Paul is a key worker in a school as well. And he's a big Worcester Warriors fan. In the South Stand there, they always used to chant my name, so good on him. He's done the treadmill marathon instead of running the London Marathon, which he was meant to do this month. So check out his Just Giving page, which is justgiving.com/fundraising/Paul-Hyde. than the number 15 if you fancy giving him some support.
Good on you, mate. We've got one last shout out as well to friends of the show, 80.club, who make the Rugby Pod t-shirts. They've got one home team t-shirt out now. All the proceeds are going to the NHS. So just check out 80.club/home team if you fancy getting your hands on one of those. Woo woo!
Thanks, Jim. Thanks, Scooty. Thanks, producer Tim. Thank you very much for listening as well. We really appreciate everyone who subscribes, follows us on Twitter, and particularly those who leave us a nice review on iTunes. And don't forget, if you're in need of more great rugby content while you're stuck indoors, check out our Superfans monthly subscription service at patreon.com/therugbypod.
Rugby pod.
Pod, pod, pod.